On today's Church TechCast Q&A, video over IP, how to act online, and video over Wi-Fi. Everyone, and welcome again to another episode of the Church TechCast Q&A show. My name is Paul Allen Clifford, and I will be your host today as we talk about all sorts of fun church tech related things. And I'd just love you to ask your questions. Right now I've got the chat open and Justin is there. And so I can interact with him or anyone else that chooses to hop into the chat room. Also, you can head over to trinitydigitalmedia.com/contact. You can find my email address. You can also find the phone number or just comment. It's really up to you. I also have my Twitter handle right here under my face in the video, and that is at Paul Allen Cliff, PaulAlanCliff. And I'm happy to talk to you there as well. Now, before we get started, let's just real quick talk about a couple little things. One is my streaming host, churchstreaming.tv. Churchstreaming.tv provides all the bandwidth for the video podcast of the churchtechcast.com shows, as well as providing iOS streaming, Android streaming, computer streaming, and a Roku channel for me. And they provide these services for one flat rate. So your church can get in on it. Just head over to trinitydigitalmedia.com/churchstreaming and you can get a 1 month free trial and see if it's right for you. I don't want you to buy it just because I said so. I want you to try it and see if it's the right hosting for you. I think that you'll find that it is just great, great stuff. Also, my pastor is releasing a book. Actually, he's written it. It's being edited right now, and it is available for pre-order on Amazon as we speak. Should be shipping in the next couple of months. So head over to trinitydigitalmedia.com/whatlifebook. If you are in a place where you would love to pursue your dreams, where you just feel there's something holding you back from everything that God has in mind for you, this is the book for you. I was there for the sermon series on which this is based, and this upcoming weekend, if you're watching this before February 15th, 2014, or February 16th, head over to churchforyou.tv and church at 5:55 Eastern on Saturday and Sunday at 9:30 and 11:30 a.m. Eastern. You can watch us talk about this book and get some insights that, frankly, I don't even know yet. And I've heard some of the pieces. I'm on the launch team for the book. That's why I'm talking about it. This isn't a paid advertisement, by the way. This is just, I believe, in my pastor's book. So head over and take a look at that. So let's get started with some questions, shall we? First, Tracy McKeithen on the Church Tech group over on Google Plus asks, "Hi everyone, I'm an IT professional who's been asked to help with a need in our church. We would like to broadcast live video from our sanctuary to about 8 TVs scattered over 2 buildings. We would also like the ability to show announcements, recorded videos before worship, etc. I'm thinking video over IP. Does anyone have any experience recommendations for this? Any particular products? I can handle the networking cabling if I know the right video product to use. Thanks." Okay, Tracy, basically you've got three choices. You can do video over IP, like you suggest. The problem with that is you're going to run into some latency because you need to take the video, encode it, and then send it over the network where it needs to be decoded and so on. If the rooms that you're dealing with aren't within earshot or eyeshot of the sanctuary, that's no problem whatsoever. Another problem is it could potentially, depending on how robust your network is, it could tax your network. So that's something to keep in mind as you're pursuing this. From further discussions, we found out that these eight rooms are, some of them are pretty far away. So perhaps this other solution that I'm going to suggest may or may not work for you. The next solution is you can use Cat5 as a dumb pipe, just using the cabling, with something called a balun, B-A-L-U-N. What it does is it balances and then unbalances the signal so that it can go further distances. So with a balun, you won't have as much issue with latency. But depending on which format you go for, there are HDMI balans, there are component balans, there are VGA balans, there are even composite balans. Depending on which format you go for, you might need to get the audio there separately. If you go over HDMI or SDI with these balans, you wouldn't, because that can be on the same cable. You could also run, depending on distance, again, you can run HDSDI over RG6 cable as well, and HDSDI can also have audio. So the problem with that is it's going to be more difficult to run the cabling initially. Now, if you've already got it, if you've already got network cable run, you cannot just jack into the network with this. This is a dedicated set of cabling. So keep that in mind, but you're going to have less latency. The third option is to do it over the internet. Now, this has a few additional problems. First off, you've got the same issue of latency, although it's going to be more pronounced. Secondly, depending on the service you use, you might run into copyright issues. Right now I'm fighting with YouTube because they have noticed that I'm using a song that is under copyright, which I have specific written permission from the artist before they got signed by a record label to use. I've done everything right, and I told them, and then the faceless corporation that administers the copyright said, "We don't care. Pull it down anyway." So the song I've used for 9 years on one of my shows, I might have to abandon because I don't have tons of money for a lawyer to fight this. And YouTube specifically is very gun-shy about being sued. They've been sued for $1 billion before from Sony Viacom. So my one little podcast, it just doesn't rank with them. And it's sad that it's that way. I could sue them. I wouldn't sue YouTube, by the way. I would sue this third party that is denying me the right to use the song that I have permission to use, but I really can't. So that's a problem with using something like YouTube. So I think if I were you, depending on the location, I would either do it over a dedicated cabling system using balans or RG6 and HDSDI, or I would do it within my network and just hope that, you know, if you have Gigi, you're probably fine. But if you've got some legacy gear that's like T-Base 10, you might run into some issues with eight TVs running a signal that's maybe 1 megabit. You see how that could be problematic? So that's some of the issues. Just something to consider. Jesse Gruber over on the Church Tech group on Google+ asked, I was recently writing an article on how we as Christians should compose ourselves on the interwebs. Yeah, he said interwebs. The more I thought about it, I think I'm going to do a part two on what are some differences in communicating to an unbeliever on the internet and communicating to a believer. Do you guys have any pointers or tips that you have for communicating to different groups of people on the internet? Well, Jesse, first and foremost, I think I would say remember you're communicating to different people. We as Christians have terminology that we use. Now, some people call it the language of Zion, which is in and of itself terminology. Quick story, I was in a small group with a couple probably 8-10 years ago. Let's see here, our kids were both babies, so it would have been about 10 years ago, 10, 11 years ago. And someone said, I need you to hold me accountable for this. And then the wife in this group said, what does that mean? I thought that was pretty basic language, but she didn't even know that. So you've got to use language that people understand. Thing number one. Thing number two, this is something that Ken Ham with the Creation Museum needs to learn. Learn from Jesus and start with where people agree with you. Okay? So if you're talking to someone who believes only in science, spouting every piece of scripture in the world will not help them whatsoever. Not even a little bit. You need to start with what they agree with. In this case, science. The reason I say Jesus did this is when the Sadducees asked him about the resurrection, most people with his background, who were not God, of course, but who were in the school of thought that Jesus generally subscribed to, would have pulled out references from Ezekiel. But the Sadducees didn't believe Ezekiel was scripture. They only believed that the first five books of the Old Testament were scripture. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. That was their whole Bible. So Jesus picks out a verse from Genesis, where God says, I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. See, they both agree that that's scripture. Jesus believes the entire Old Testament is scripture. The Sadducees believe only the first five books, so where does Jesus pull from? The first five books. So they could agree on what he was talking about. They didn't immediately dismiss him because he was pulling from a book that they don't agree with. You see that? So then he builds his argument based on scripture that they would have agreed with. So he says, God is not the God of the dead, but of the living. Notice he says, I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, even though Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob had died at this point. So that's his basis for believing in the resurrection. Oh, that gives them something to think about. So you have to start with a commonality. Now, I have a very close friend, well, not very close, but pretty close friend, who said, well, if someone doesn't accept scripture, they will argue against whatever evidence you bring up. Yes, but they're arguing against the evidence. They're not arguing against scripture. They're arguing against what they say they believe. So that is a stronger position to start with. understand. So those are the things that I would keep in mind when talking to people that are not Christians, is use language they understand to start with commonalities and build from there. I think that those are probably the most important things. Also, feel free to acknowledge places where we've screwed up. The Crusades were pretty much a mistake. How the church treated Galileo, big mistake. Wish it hadn't happened. Slavery, huge mistake. Acknowledge that we're not perfect. They know we're not perfect. Acknowledge that and go from there. So if they bring up mistakes, we're not perfect. We make mistakes. Be sorry for the mistakes, even if you had nothing to do with them. I'm sorry for slavery, even though I had nothing to do with it. I have never owned a slave. I have never had the opportunity to own a slave. I would not be interested in owning a slave. But I'm remarkably sorry that that ever happened, even though I have no responsibility for it. I wish it had not happened. That's okay to say, I think. This is 2014. We can acknowledge the mistakes of the past and say we wish they hadn't happened, even though we didn't cause them. So those are probably the three things that I would do in dealing with non-believers. I think it's okay to acknowledge that you're trying really hard to be better, and that you're not there yet as well. Because when you act like you have it all together, you think you're saying, well, Jesus is totally done with me, everything's perfect, he's great. What you're actually saying is, I'm a hypocrite. I say one thing and I do another. But if you say one thing and do another, but also say, and I am so screwed up, oh my gosh, I'm screwed up. I think that helps too. By the way, I'm so screwed up. If you ever hear about something horrible that I've done, it's because I'm so screwed up. This is why I need Jesus, because I'm so screwed up. He's not done working with me. He's not done fixing me. I am messed up. Oh, one of our pastors says, I'm toe up from the flow up. He's more hip than I am. He's younger too. But anyway, so those are all the things that I think that we need to keep in mind when we're dealing with non-believers. And I think we need to be honest when we're dealing with believers as well. I think the times of us putting on a happy face because it's Sunday and putting on good clothes so that people don't know how screwed up we are, those times are over. So let's be honest with one another. It really helps someone to know that you're struggling too. Okay, Bong Balin, again on the Church Tech Group, asks, aside from Intel WIDI, W-I-D-I, what are different options for projecting my laptop or PC to a TV monitor or projector wirelessly? There are HDMI wireless connectors that you can use if you've got HDMI out on your computer. That's thing one. You can also use Chromecast if it's a video that you're sending. So that's thing two. If it's a Mac running Mavericks, then Apple TV is the absolutely obvious choice. You plug that in and it shows up as another monitor and you're done. So that's the three options that I would look at. Okay, over on the Church Tech Leaders Forum, Gary Clegg asks, is anyone using the new Mac Pro for CG? We currently have two CG Mac Pro towers with Blackmagic HD to SDI cards. I am looking to upgrade to the new Mac Pro is it as simple as Thunderbolt to HD SDI converter? Are there any ProPresenter issues with Mavericks OS? Thoughts? I believe that a Thunderbolt to HD SDI converter would work. Yeah, it should work. I don't see any problem there. I haven't tested it, though. So I'm always hesitant in saying something will work if I haven't tested it. That's thing one. Thing two, wow, this sounds a lot like Dr. Seuss. Thing one and thing two. Thing two, Mavericks does have an issue with ProPresenter. The biggest issue that I've seen is, right now I am looking at a secondary monitor, and it has on the top, right up there, it has the title bar, which is why I love Mavericks. This is something that they should have added a long time ago. But some people have had mixed results getting rid of that for ProPresenter, so they still have that on top of the screen. Now, there's a workaround where you can adjust your projector so it cuts it off, things like that. But that's I think, the biggest issue with Mavericks. So, I don't know that I would recommend saying, yeah, absolutely, get that, you'll run it this weekend. Well, first off, they're on back order. Mac Pros are selling like hotcakes. They can't make them fast enough. I think I heard that right now they're back ordered until April. As I'm recording it, it's February. Before, they were back ordered until February. Now that it's February, they're back ordered until April. I'm guessing that if you don't order them fast enough, they will be back ordered till June. So that's something to keep in mind. They're just really popular machines because there was some pent-up demand since the time that they last released the new Mac Pro. So, portable church monitor. Matt Robertson is asking about this on CTL. I'm putting together plans for our second campus, which will be a portable venue. I will be rack mounting two Mac Minis Sonnet, and I'm curious what solutions are out there to make monitors portable as well, besides keeping the original box packaging. I need a two monitor setup, one for each Mini. The Minis will be in a 4U case with the scaler and Furman. Okay, so you could add, depending on the size of the monitors, that's very important. I've seen drawers where you can slide out the monitor and pop it up, plug it into power. So you can put in two of those. I think, again, depending on the size of the monitor, I've seen them in 1U cases, 1U drawers before. So you could put in a couple more. So instead of a 4U case, put in like a 6U case, and you'd be okay. Again, depending on the size of the monitor. If it's a huge monitor that is frankly too wide for a drawer, by the way, the drawer needs to be padded. That's also important. If it's too big for a drawer, then you could get a separate Rode case. If it's, say, a 42-inch monitor or larger, put two of those in a single Rode case with wheels, and you should be good to go. But that is basically what I would recommend in those cases. Your idea is you want as few connections to be made on Sunday morning as possible. So ideally, you would have a setup where you take the case, put it on a desk or a folding table, take off the front and back, plug it into power, and you're done. Ideally, that's what you want. So there are depending on the size of the monitor again, deals where it's a drawer, but it's all integrated, so you keep the power and the monitor connection cable, and it just flips up. So that's a good possibility. Justin in the chat room points out, for a portable monitor, if 15 inches is sufficient, you could do a rack mount KVM in each of the cases. That's true. That would also give you keyboard and mouse pre-connected. Also a good idea. Since it's two monitors in a single case, I think that's my biggest area of concern. But I suppose it's possible that you could have them on an articulated arm and just separate them as well. So a KVM is a keyboard video mouse, he points out. Good pointing out, because sometimes we use this terminology and we forget about it from an earlier question. So let's see here. Okay. Next, Ben Salzman asks, "Hey guys, got an email this morning from our website hosting service saying that they will be shutting down on May 1st. Obviously, I'm scrambling now to find an alternative. What do you guys use for your church website? Are you hosting it off-site, or do you have a local file server? Full part-time webmaster, any input would be appreciated. Thanks." So my personal website, the churchtechcast.com network, create.ingchurch, podcastingchurch, paulclifford.org, trinitydigitalmedia.com, those are all hosted on Westhost, which is $13 a month, which is a little more pricey than some others, but their service is worth the extra money. So Westhost is what I use. There is also, I am blanking right now on the name of the service. I'm not a 501c3 company, so I can't use this, but there one Dreamhost. There we go. Dreamhost has free hosting for 501c3 companies. So, well, not companies, but, you know, organizations like churches. So since Dreamhost has this free hosting, I think I would at least give them a try. Depending on the size of your website, you know, if you are Billy Graham's organization, I don't think they'll be able to accommodate you because it's shared hosting. But if you're a smaller organization, like if I was a 501c3, bingo, I would absolutely use that, at least as a starting point. So Dreamhost or Westhost, those are the two that I recommend, depending on your budget and depending on if it's worth it to you to spend $13 a month to get better customer service, I would go with Westhost, which is basically what I did, because I could have gone with like $2 web hosting, and I would have gotten, most of the time, I would have gotten the same stuff. It's when I really, really need someone that it's worth the extra $11 a month to me. So that's what I would keep in mind with relation to hosting. And finally, splitting video for lobby feeds from Timma Ellerbrook. What is everyone doing when it comes to your services, video feeds to your lobbies and other exterior rooms? We are splitting a coax signal from a scan converter to a TV modulator, but we're getting reduced resolution and bad quality. Okay, so if you're taking your signal, you're running it through a scan converter, then you're sending that over an RF modulator, and then you're splitting that, that's just a world of hurt. I don't know how many you have, but if you split with more than two, you're going to get reduced quality right off the bat. Now, so the second you add a third signal, you shouldn't be using a splitter. You should be using a distribution amplifier. So what a distribution amplifier does is it takes in the signal, it boosts it however much you need to boost it, and then it splits it. So what comes out is the same strength as what goes in. So you can have like a 1 to 4 DA and you'll get the same quality as if you just had a single endpoint. But I don't think that's the only problem with your situation. A scan converter typically takes a computer resolution type signal like 1024 by 768. For example, that's kind of an older resolution, but that's the one that popped into my head. Takes that and it scan converts it down to SD quality. So you're going to get, instead of 1024 by 768 in this example, you would get 640 by 480i. So you're already just probably about 60% quality, if that. And then you RF modulate it, and then you split it, and that's a bit of a problem, especially if you're going into, on the other end, HD TVs, because then they are taking all that and they're upconverting it, and their upconverters, depending on the brand, may not be great. So what I would do is, first off, if you're on SD, just replacing the splitter with the DA might make it as good as it can be. If your televisions are HD, what you want to do is you want to get the best quality signal there you can. If they were professional monitors, the solution is HDSDI, High Definition Serial Digital Interface, HDSDI. That, if you've got that, that's the way to go. That's the professional way to do it. You run that over RG6, and you'll get a pristine video signal with audio, and you will love it. You're probably not doing that, though. So let's talk about what you probably have. You probably have regular HD TVs like you pick up at Walmart or Best Buy or order off of Amazon, and they have their best input is most likely HDMI, which I hate because HDMI is looking for a problem. It's engineered to fail because of copyright protection. So here's what I would do if I was in your case. I would take, again, the HDSDI signal, the best quality signal you can get, run that to each individual TV, and use a converter to go from HDSDI to HDMI with a very short cable length, maybe a meter. Typically, they're sold in meters, or about 3 feet. Or less. So that's one way to do it. You could also convert to HDMI at your video switcher, etc., and then send that out with an HDMI to Cat5 converter and send that various locations. When I say Cat5, it's like I was talking above. You're not plugging this into your network. You're having a dedicated cable that's Cat5, Cat6, Cat5e, whatever the system you buy calls for. So don't think that you're just plugging it into the network, because that won't do it. In fact, depending on the Balun that you use to convert from HDMI to Cat5 and back, there's a good chance this needs to be one continuous uninterrupted cable, because if there is any connection, you're losing a bit of bandwidth, and that bit might be just enough. And I mean bit by a small amount, not ones or zeros. You're losing some bandwidth. And I've seen where you have a problem just because you have a connection on one end or the other. I hate that, but that's what I've seen happen before. So those are just the things that I would think about. If there are any more questions, comments, or even snide remarks, remember that you can head over to trinitydigitalmedia.com. All those are spelled the normal way. /contact and leave a question, leave a comment, tell me you like the show, tell me you'd like to have it change, what have you, and I will be happy to oblige you. I hope that you find this information helpful, and I hope that you'll use it to go out and change eternity. Until next time, I'm Paul Allen Clifford with TrinityDigitalMedia.com.